Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in and around the sports industry. Today, we're excited to welcome our next guest, Tim George, to the show. Tim is currently the senior AD for external affairs at UNCG, and through his tenure has helped the Spartans develop a unique brand identity while also driving strategic initiatives to help drive revenue to their programs. Tim is a graduate from the University of Missouri and had a few stops along his professional journey at the University of Oklahoma, TCU, and the University of Georgia before landing in Greensboro for the last 10 years. This year, he has been tasked to pull from all of his experiences to find unique ways to drive revenue in the current environment of collegiate athletics while also providing a top-notch experience for all their athletes. Tim currently lives out in Greensboro, North Carolina, but for the next 45 minutes, he's here on Checkpoint with us. Tim, welcome to the show, my man. How you doing today?
Hey, thanks, Scott. Doing very well.
Awesome. Well, we are super excited to have you. And, you know, we got a ton to unpack. But for all you first-time listeners, Checkpoint is really what the name is. We're going to spend the next 45 minutes going behind the scenes, hearing Tim's story on how he got here, you know, what he's currently working on over there in Greensboro, and, you know, based on all his experience, you know, where he sees this market going. So, you know, Tim, this is going to be an action-packed 45 minutes. So let's dive right in. Who is Tim George? Where does your journey begin that leads you up to UNCG?
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks again for having me, Scott. Looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. So just a little about me. I grew up in Missouri, small town Missouri, the one-stop light town. You know, I tell people it's kind of a mix of Friday Night Lights and Hoosiers, where, you know, everything shuts down for whatever high school game's going on, which was awesome. That was a great atmosphere to grow up in, playing sports, and just that's where my love of sports grew. Went to the University of Missouri, as you mentioned, and I worked there in marketing as an undergrad, as an intern, as most, you know, people do in our profession. Stayed on as kind of a graduate intern for another about year and a half after that, and then I moved on to the University of Florida to work in their marketing department as an intern. And from there, moved on to Georgia, as you'd mentioned. I had a stop there for 4 years. Awesome time in Athens. Loved that. And again, worked in marketing and oversaw, you know, there are more specific sports as far as I had women's basketball, women's soccer, gymnastics, really allowed me to kind of grow there a little bit and kind of take on some ownership. And then I moved to TCU to become the director of marketing, and first time to run my own shop, which was awesome. Great experience. Was there for 2 years before going up to Oklahoma, and I was at Oklahoma for six as assistant AD, eventually an assistant AD for marketing. And then I mentioned it came out to Greensboro, and I've been at UNCG for, this is my 10th year now, which is pretty hard to believe, actually. I've been here that long.
Wow. Wow. And I mean, it's really unique to get somebody on with, you know, such, you know, unique perspective, but really in your same lane and, you know, doing this, you know, with a 10-year of, you know, 20 years of experience. Like, I mean, I imagine the game has changed quite a bit from you. And so, you know, sort of going back to your early days when you were at UF and when you were, you know, coming through, you know, University of Georgia, are there any of those nuggets that you've pulled, you know, went back to the, you know, to the brain for or pulled on during this sort of shakeup with COVID?
Yeah, some. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, and it's funny you mentioned it, because going back to really even Mizzou in Florida and then in Georgia, you know, some of those kind of pivotal moments in my career that I kind of think back on that are beneficial right now. I mean, certainly when I was at Mizzou and at Florida, you know, you're young, just kind of starting to figure out what the business is even like or about. And I was lucky to have some incredible mentors at both places that, one, let me really jump in and take some ownership of some programs, but also, you know, make some mistakes, which I think is super important and probably something that I feel like we've gotten away from, is that everything has to be perfect. And, you know, sometimes you just have to make some mistakes to learn. And but the other thing was just building my network. They were so gracious. And those folks, I still remain in close contact with today, and they were pivotal in my ability to get other opportunities and look at other opportunities. Now, you know, your network's never going to get you the job, but they can definitely get you in the door, and then you have to finish it from there. But so I learned, you know, learned a ton there from the folks at both Missouri and Florida. And then at Georgia, you know, one of the things that that I'd been thinking about a lot is, you know, right now, obviously, there's been a lot of change and people are trying to just figure things out a little as we go. I mean, it feels like every day there's a new challenge or hurdle that kind of pops up. And some of these things are really, really new or different, at least from what we've been doing. And, you know, one of the things I thought back to Georgia, and it's funny, at the time I was probably too young and maybe dumb or naive to really, I guess, for it to register as much. But I can remember starting there, and I mentioned women's soccer was one of the sports that I directly was responsible for their marketing. And we had a home opener, and it was my first event that I was going to handle on my own at Georgia. And it was a women's soccer home opener. It was the first time they'd had lights at their stadium. So we were just opening. And so I put a lot of effort and time into marketing, you know, marketing the event and putting on kind of what was hoped to be a big show, but I didn't know how big it would be. And our coach at the time at Georgia, a great guy, I ended up really getting along very well with him, but was a pretty gruff guy, pretty hard, and probably had seen about five of me come through during his tenure, you know, five different marketing people that in this business, obviously you're young, you come through and you're maybe there a couple of years and you leave. So was probably skeptical, and which I can appreciate. And so the first event comes night of the match, and we've got a line of cars backed up so far on the highway. Like, they had to bring the police out, and like my event management's looking at me like, what happened? What are you doing? And I'm like, I just promoted the event, you know? And like, so for me, it was awesome though, because we set this new record. I mean, there were thousands of fans there. I think the record was like 3,500 or 3,600 fans. And prior to that, it had been like, I don't know, maybe like 1,500 or something. And so afterwards, you know, the coach, like, I think was as amazed as we were, as I was, and I should say surprised. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like I thought I had it all figured out and knew this. I was blown away. And it was interesting how just the relationship changed really quickly, and I had built trust up with him. And I get, to me, it's just that power of kind of setting the tone. Like, when you first, whether it's your first getting into a job or first taking on something new or going down a new path, how important it is to get off on the right foot. Because from there on, like, you know, I'd bring an idea to him and he was pretty cool with it, you know, like, because I think he felt like, maybe I know what I was talking about, and maybe I didn't, maybe I didn't, but at least off of that one event, it kind of helped solidify that. And so, and not just with him, but I think with then others in the department, whether other coaches that I was working with or other colleagues, you know, maybe, you know, I think that just kind of set the tone for my time there, that, that I, again, I could be trusted. I kind of knew what I was doing, and it's just really important. Like I said, now, right now, with so many different things going on and so many changes happening, I think as we're trying new things, it's, you know, you should never be afraid to fail, but it's hard to put a price tag on how important it is to get off on the right foot on something.
Yeah, no, I mean, you bring up so many great points there that I think are just relevant to not only the situation we're going in as a whole, but, you know, as we go forward facing, you know, in defining what the next iteration of this looks like. You know, one of the things that I live by is, you know, actions speak louder than words. So it's, you know, if you show up and throw up, you're going to get that result. But if you do the hard work and, you know, you come in with a vision that not everyone's going to be able to see right now, because it's really murky to the light at the end of the tunnel. But I couldn't agree more. You start to build those pillars of trust, and, you know, to dial in a little bit more to what you're doing over there in Greensboro, I mean, just reading about some of your guys' program, I mean, you know, with the GPA of the 3.24 for the department, you know, men's and women's basketball coming off of, you know, championship seasons. I mean, it seems like you guys had that figured out. I'm curious, how as a department are you taking that momentum that you had and sort of using that to steer the ship, you know, to provide hope and opportunity for your athletes this season?
Right. Well, it's funny you said that. That's been one of our discussions a lot has been we had some great momentum going and then COVID hit. And so it's really felt, you know, and not just us, I think across the country, it probably feels like the balloon has been deflated a little bit. And it's just, okay, how do we pick back up where we left off? And to be honest, we're still having a lot of discussions about that and still really trying to figure that out. But for us, it's been important to remain engaged, obviously, with our fans, and obviously with our student athletes and our coaches, and trying to do the best that we can for them. Obviously, with safety and well-being being foremost in those, but trying to help keep their programs moving in the right direction. One of the things that we've put a lot of effort into here, going back to when I started, was, you know, you mentioned men's and women's basketball, and we really honed in on that. Men's basketball is our flagship sport. We don't have football. And so we knew that for us to be successful overall, we needed basketball to be good, and we needed to support them in the manner that gave them the opportunity to win championships and be successful in the classroom and all those kinds of things. So actually, when we had a strategic plan that we created, it's been 4 years ago now, and probably unheard of in most places, that basketball was one of the priorities in the strategic plan, even that, you know, it wasn't just, I mean, certainly there's things that are, or there's priorities that encompass the entire department, but basketball was one that we highlighted and said, we want to be the premier program in the Southern Conference for men's and women's basketball. And so, you know, how do we align our resources and our efforts to create that? And, you know, I won't lie, early on, it was when I first got here, it was a long, you know, seemed like that was going to be an uphill battle and we might not ever get there. I mean, we started my second season 0-15. So that's hard. That's pretty tough. You know, yeah. there's not a lot of marketing plans or ticket sales plans that can really, you know, bounce back from that. But we've stayed true to the process. We've continued to believe in our coach and his program and his student athletes and just continue to get out in the community and build what, you know, everything that we could from a ticket sales standpoint, from a community relations standpoint. And I think we've finally been seeing it pay off. And like I said, now during this time, what we've just been doing is trying to engage folks and be very intentional about our conversations with them. And just trying to, and not just conversations, but our creative and our content, and trying to stay connected.
Well, you guys are doing something right. You know what I mean? It's anytime you start talking about the process, you can lump in the Bill Belichicks and the Nick Sabans of the world. And when you start talking about trusting the process, you know, sometimes it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, you know, when you put these plans in place, I think, you know, especially the millennials and Gen Zs, we're so used to this instant gratification that there's a lot to learn from that segment right there where, hey, sometimes it's going to take 4, 5, 10 years to fully execute on a vision. And so just because you hit stumbling blocks or hurdles, you have to trust the process. And Tim, I think that's just an amazing testament to what you guys have built over there at Greensboro. Now, real quick, because you talk about, you know, your external affairs, right? So you're going outward facing. Now, one of the accolades that really caught my eye were these community engagement partners, right? So you guys have 17 that you've established over there through your tenure. Have you been leaning on those, or what's that relationship been like as you're navigating sort of the new marketing schema with this evolved process?
Definitely been leaning on them a lot. And for us, you know, we're in a unique situation. Greensboro has five, most people probably don't know it. There's five different colleges here in Greensboro. We have about 250,000 people. Now, there's only two that are Division I, us and North Carolina A&T, but the others, I mean, do have some, you know, some following. They're Division III as well. And so we knew really quickly, that, you know, the number of schools in our area or in our city, combined with the fact that we're in the middle of the Big Four of the ACC, I mean, literally in the middle, North Carolina, Duke, NC State, and Wake are all within basically an hour to hour and a half drive from us. And so you have a lot of fans from those schools who live in Greensboro and work in Greensboro. So we knew early on, though, that we needed to get the community behind us. And a lot of times what we said was, you know, we don't need to be your number one team, but we'd love to be your second favorite team. You know, so for the Wake grad or the, especially like Duke and Carolina grads, who it might be a little far for them to drive on a weeknight over to watch the Blue Devils or Carolina play, that we're right here in your backyard and we'd love to have you. And so the positive is that people here love basketball and just in the state love college basketball. So we started first hooking them just with the experience and coming in. And then the great thing was we really were starting to put the product on the floor that kept them coming back and that we were winning. And we have an incredible coach. It's funny. I was going to say a young coach, and he is young, but he's been our head coach for about 9 years, but he's not even 40 yet. So it's kind of strange to say that. So but he connects with the community. He's actually from the area, so people know him. Wes played at Carolina, so there's that level of interest as well. So, but definitely have leaned on those community partners, especially the school system here, the public school system. We work with them quite a bit, not just certainly to come out to games, but we try to partner with them as far as getting athletes out into their classrooms and different kind of partnerships like that. But we actually have a lot of teachers that come from UNCG that we churn out every year. So there's a lot of alumni in the schools around here. And so that helps us as well with those connections.
Really cool. And I mean, you know, look, this is going to take a community effort to go ahead and power through this. And, you know, we all want sports back. We all want basketball to roll in the spring. But I just thought that was a really interesting bridge, you know, with those partnerships that you guys established. And then on this, you know, the flip side of it, there's the technological aspect, which is really keeping us all connected during this sort of shakeup. And, you know, quick little plug for us here at Check that, you know, why Checkpoint is alive and running is, you know, because we saw processes that needed to be streamlined. We saw in the collegiate environment that there was opportunities to evolve. And so, you know, kudos to you guys being number 8 out of what, 292 schools, you know, on the athletic director use poll for social media. I'm curious, are there any other technologies that you're leveraging or using to drive fan engagement in a non-traditional sense of the marketing?
Yeah, well, one that we've just signed on with in the last month, and I'm really excited about because I do think it's going to pay huge dividends, is with Influencer. And for those who aren't aware, I mean, Influencer essentially helps you kind of leverage your student athlete brands, and not just for our game, but for their game. And so I'm really excited about that because, you know, the power that the student athletes have through their own social media platforms is probably tenfold of what we have through our social media platforms. And so we're excited to be able to partner with Influencer because we do think it's going to make a big difference in our advertising, in our branding. And, you know, it's not that we're going to use our student athletes as just like, you know, brand spokespeople, but the fact that if they're sharing some of our content, whether it be about events, be it about a big story, that goes a long way in building that authentic voice versus it just coming from the athletics department. You know, they probably have people that follow them, and not probably, I'm sure they have people who follow them that don't follow our athletic department mediums. So when they're hearing from the student athlete, it's just more of an authentic voice. And I think it comes from a different angle.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, so quick shout out, you know, Larry Long Jr. was one of our earlier guests who leads up the college side at Teamworks and Influencers, you know, under the umbrella there with those guys. And, you know, back to earlier in our conversation, you talk about trust in the process. I mean, I had been following Jim and Nita and those, you know, guys at Influencer for years now. And to think that they saw the vision of where name, image, and likeness was going. And now we're at this intersection where, you know, there's federal legislation on it, and it's no longer a if, now it's a matter of when. You know, it just sort of goes back to that through line of like, if you believe that, you know, what you're doing is, you know, the right thing for the right reason, and you have the process around it, sometimes it's a marathon, but boy, when we end up there, it's just really neat to come full circle and hear schools now starting to implement this technology that when I was playing and heard about it, I was like, yeah, right. No way that athletes are earning on their name, image, or likeness. And so really, really quite cool there. Now, from a marketing lens, you know, you touch a little bit about, you know, authenticity. You touch a little bit about, you know, the players growing the brand for the school. Have you guys had some of those more in-depth discussions on what that relationship will look like from marketing to the athlete when it comes to name, image, and likeness? Or where do you guys stand on that?
We haven't, I mean, we've had some early discussions, but I think really we're trying to see where this all kind of, where it all comes out with the legislation. Now, I will tell you, though, you know, going back to influencer, as I mentioned, you know, it's not, we don't see it just as for our benefit. What we do, you know, we also see this as for the student athletes, helping them build their personal brands. You know, and with that, we also, I don't know, if you know Jeremy Darlow, but we've also partnered with Jeremy to help our student athletes. And you know, he's doing courses with them, just helping them build things like their kind of their own social or their own personal branding plans so that, you know, the way we explain it to them is this isn't about going professional and what you're going to do with that. Hopefully, you know, as many of them that want to have that opportunity have it, but so many of them, go out to the real world and get a job that's not in, or at least not as a professional athlete. What you're building right now in college can help you land that job when you get out by leveraging your social, not just your social media, but your personal branding platform. So that's where we see a real benefit, and we hope the student athletes do as well. I mean, I think they will. A lot of them, it's funny, are way more savvy with that, I think, than a lot of us probably give them credit for or thought. But they are, and I think they understand that. And so I'm excited about that. I was really happy when Jeremy had contacted us early on, and that, you know, it was something we jumped at. We wanted to get on board quickly.
That's awesome. And I mean, look, at whether we like it or not, this is the reality of where sports are at. And you know, instead of burying our head like some of the other pillars, you know, when it comes to financial literacy or mental health, and we didn't really educate, we just said, hey, go into this arena and do it. It's really exciting as we go through this next evolution and next wave that we're properly educating folks, especially the 18 to 22 year olds, how to responsibly engage, you know, with this social media, how to, you know, build a brand story that will position you for success. And so for me, it's just really nice to see this holistic education to the athlete and not just for the time that you're at UNCG, which is, you know, kudos to you guys to be forward facing and you know, fortuitous this opportunity. So while we're on the topic of UNCG, I was doing some homework and I got to ask a really inadvertent random question.
Okay.
4-year-old donut. What the heck is that?
Well, so I wish I knew more on it than I do. I know it is in our archives, and yeah, there is a 40-year-old donut there that they. I'm not sure why they still like what the background is on why they have it there for research, but I guess for all of us, the good news is it hasn't. I don't know. Started. You know, glowing like it's nuclear or something crazy like that to worry about your, you know, about what we're ingesting. But no, it's actually, it's funny. I think that story is about to be picked up maybe by some national outlets. And I know we're doing a partnership with Dunkin' Donuts locally. That's going to actually help some raise some money for some charities here coming up soon because it's the anniversary of the 40-year-old donut.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. And I was like, if this isn't a marketing opportunity, then I don't know what the heck is, you know, this is unbelievable. So, well, really interesting, you know, I mean, it's really quite cool to get behind and start to hear about, you know, how you guys are thinking about navigating these waters. And, you know, I know, I just want to touch on this because, you know, what you've drummed up, I don't want you to give away the secret sauce, but you know, when it comes to ticket revenue being down, when it comes to some of these alternatives or the main revenue streams being down, you know, Tim, you did a great job of being creative. And I think creativity and authenticity is really what is getting people's attraction or attention right now. Would love for you to touch on, you know, the face covering, some of the ideas with the subscription boxes, because I just man, I couldn't get over when we spoke last about how much of an impact that's really making.
Yeah, well, you know, as we were kind of talking earlier, when COVID hit, that has, at the time and even now, obviously, it's changed things so much for what we do, and or at least from an external operations standpoint. Normally, as you mentioned, we're really focused on ticket sales because right now we would be right in the thick of that, and we would have our Spartan Madness basketball event coming up here in about 3 weeks, and those kinds of things aren't happening. So we needed to shift, one, to find some different sources for revenue, two, to find different ways to engage our fans. And so when everything started back in March, to be honest, the first, I would say week, but it lingered a little bit longer than that. I think it was honestly for a lot of us just a gut punch, because you're used to having events right now, and it's gone. And I can't even begin to put myself in the shoes of our student athletes who were spring sport athletes that, you know, their seasons ended like that. So I don't want to sound like I'm, and in their shoes and know exactly what it feels like. But for us as staff, a lot of us, we take those relationships very personal. And I mean, those teams are our teams. And, so that was hard. And so then I think after we kind of got up off the mat after a week or two and said, okay, what are we going to do? We need to pivot here, not sure how long this is going to last. And so we started looking again. Obviously, social was the best way to engage everybody. And so first it was about engagement. And those first really couple months, that's what we focused on, was engagement, engagement, engagement. If it was videos, if it was contests, whatever it was, just any ways that we could stay involved with our fans. Like a lot of people, we made wellness check calls to our season ticket holders. Didn't talk about money, didn't talk about renewals, just wanted to see how they were doing and making sure they're all right. And if we could do anything to please let us know. And I think those things were well received because, you want to engage with people. You also didn't want to look like you're kind of have your head in the sand and just wanting to talk about, well, hey, can we get you signed up for your season tickets? And normally we would have been renewing season tickets starting in April. We put the brakes on that, like most, and we waited actually until I think the first part of June, until we felt like people might be in a better place to really even talk about it. And those were really early renewals for us. But then as we started going through the summer, we started looking at different ways to generate some new revenue. And, you mentioned the face masks and you mentioned some of those things, the subscription boxes. For us, and this may not be the case with everybody, but our avenue was through merchandise, through online merchandise specifically, because we don't have like an Aramark or somebody that handles our concessions, our merchandise and concession sales here on campus, or at least through athletic venues. So we decided that we would jump into that and put some effort into it. And the face coverings, right place, right time, that was phenomenal. We, this is a big number for us. I don't know about some Power Fives and things, but we sold 1,600 face coverings, generated an extra almost over $10,000 for us, which is, again, it was new money. It was found money. So it was well worth it. And then we've done a few other kind of one-off specialty items, basketball jerseys and things like that. And then we just launched the subscription box that you mentioned, which for those who are familiar with, I know there's lots of different ones out there, but who are familiar with the subscription or aren't familiar with the subscription box, it's basically that we have, we launch one each season, fall, spring, or fall, winter, spring, summer. And, you opt in for a price, and then you're going to get, usually probably 3 to 4, maybe 5 items each season that have to do, that are obviously UNCG branded, but that are pertinent to that season. So the fall box, we had like an Eddie Bauer pullover, and it was really kind of the marquee item, but it gave us a chance to, again, hopefully generate some additional revenue. It's out right now, and the deadline's coming up next week. And then the other thing for us is, a lot of times as a as a mid-major, we don't have, you know, nearly the number of products out there that like a Texas, you know, or Carolina might have. So it gave us the opportunity also just to offer some things that our fans don't normally see. And so we thought that would be of value as well. So we're excited. You know, we got the fall box, like I said, underway. We're excited. We're already actually working on the winter box and items that will go into that one. And we've had really positive feedback so far, and we're excited to see where this thing can go.
Well, I tell you, if that doesn't give you hope that there's silver lining in all of this, and that, you know, if you have creativity and you're, you know, just immersing yourself in like the present, this is where we're at, and we have to play the cards that were dealt. Tim, I think, you know, you and your team did an amazing job, and you heard the word pivot, like we're all basketball players in 2020, but I think that's one of the more opportunistic pivots that I've heard. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see this catch on as a trend for other mid-major D2, D3 schools. And, you know, you talk about, you know, that fan experience. It's really hard when you're not in the stands or when you have the ability to come on campus. So if you're able to at least rock your Eddie Bauer UNCG sweater pullover on these calls, doing it virtual, it makes you just feel a part of it again. And I think that you guys have done a great job encapsulating that fan experience, that community experience, and then ultimately just providing, you know, the best experience for your guys' athletes and departments. So, you know, hats off to what you're doing over there at Greensboro. Now we're gonna put a little feather in that, because we want to get to know Tim a little bit on the personal side now. So I'm curious, you know, as you have gone to, you know, gone through your ranks, are there any moments, like sporting event moments, or, you know, from Oklahoma or Georgia that you've been a part of that just really stick out to you through your tenure?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good question. There's a lot. And I've been fortunate, you know, and that's probably one of the things that I feel so fortunate, having, been in this business ever since I've been in college. You know, as far as events, you know, I mentioned the soccer match at Georgia, and that one always sticks in my mind because it was just, like I said, it was a cool way to start. And at the time I was probably didn't realize how, you know, how special that really was until I looked back on it later. Sure. You know, there's a few, one would be at Georgia also for, when Georgia women's basketball, we were, I think that year it was the year we went to the Final Four, which was in itself awesome, and got to make that trip. And that was a really cool experience. But we played Tennessee that year at home. And obviously, you know, I mean, this is with Pat Summitt and Coach Summitt and our coach, Coach Landers, had some kind of legendary battles. And it was a big deal for that game, a big deal for him and for everybody that we sell it out. And so we put a lot of effort into that game, and we did get it sold out. And what was cool was I can still remember being in the tunnel as our girls were running out, and to see their faces when the crowd just roared when they came out, and the smiles, and just that was something I'll always really cherish and thought was really, really cool. And shows you, again, the power you have, not just with fans, but with student athletes and their experience. And that's something I always cherish. I was trying to think, I mean, you know, there's been, like I said, I've been really fortunate, a lot of the, just the opportunities I've had. And another one, well, two more, more recent ones from UNCG, one I was not personally involved in, but just being here for it and knowing him as an individual. So, the Rio Olympics, we had a cross country and track runner that had made the U.S. team and was running 3000 in Rio. His name's Paul Chelimo. And Paul, like I said, he had run here, and he was an incredible runner. I mean, he was SoCon champion, I think almost every year he was here. He went to the Nationals, I think finished as a runner up. But was, you know, just a really incredible runner, but he was also a great guy. And he's originally from Kenya, and, he would work in our athletics department. Like, he worked with facilities and some other places, to earn some extra dollars. And, it's funny, 'cause one of his one of his duties one night was he actually was our mascot for a basketball game because we were short. So that was, it was kind of funny, but then, so fast forward to the Rio Olympics and we were just going to, I mean, we, he didn't have a lot of expectations on him. We were going to be excited if he honestly got into just the finals and he ended up winning his qualifying heat. And again, we're thinking, okay, that's really cool, but it was a qualifier, you know, it's just good that he's in the finals. And then we end up, everything lined up. This was, one of the first nights that freshmen had moved in and onto campus. So there's a lot of activity around campus, lots of parents still here and freshmen. And we had a big watch party over on campus and, in this huge ballroom. And it was probably, I think there was probably 800 to 900 people in there, for this watch party. And again, we're just hoping that Paul just does okay, finishes middle of the pack, just cool to really promote a UNCG athlete. That was our first and only ever Olympian. And then at the end, he's kind of sticking, he's hanging in there. And then it's coming down the home stretch and he, you know, he's coming around the final turn and he just comes flying out of the pack and is challenging, and now I'm forgetting the guy's name, but challenging the champion or the leader. Then this guy had been, I knew he was at least one time, if not two time Olympic champion in that race, and really gave him run for his money. Ended up getting second, and so he got a silver medal. But like our place was going in, you know, insane, as you can imagine. People were cheering, and it was really fun to see. And so it was cool because again, knowing Paul and the kind of guy he is, and he's been back a couple times and done some things for us, and he's just very gracious and always speaks really highly of UNCG. And it's been cool to see him go on and do something so special. And the other one I would share was just, it's kind of a two-part experience, but is when our men's basketball team finally won the SoCon championship, the tournament, and we're heading to the NCAAs. And that was, you know, you talk about, again, all these things you've put in place, and not just myself, but so many people here and all the effort that had gone into it and all the patience from our fans and the work our coaches had put in and student athletes, and to win and just kind of to feel that emotion, you know, it was actually emotional. I mean, it was, you know, I'd be lying if I'd say that I didn't have a tear in my eye at the end when the buzzer sounded, because you've been working so hard for that. And to see it happen and just the excitement on everybody's faces. And then we go out to Boise. We get sent pretty much as far away as we can from Greensboro. And we're going to play Gonzaga, you know, basically in their backyard. And then we go out there and we have to lead with a minute to go. And again, just being out there and experiencing it with our team and seeing, the people who had made the trip out there and also just seeing, you know, the people in the arena who weren't UNCG fans, but probably just there to watch a game, and how it's a cool thing about the tournament, in my opinion, is, you know, the fans always turn to whoever the underdog is, especially if they're winning. And so it was awesome. I mean, it was crushing that we lost, but I probably think about that game at least once a week, if not more. It's just something will trigger a memory of it. And it was just such a cool experience. And it really helped put us on the map and kind of get things started. So it was a long-winded answer, but I could go on and on. There's so many cool experiences that I've been fortunate to have. And I mean, I'm thankful every day, you know, for what I get to do.
Well, Tim, I got to tell you, you know, one of the through lines through this conversation has been that, you know, I genuinely feel it from you that you measure your successes based on what the program and the people around you are doing. You know, so the more you're behind the scenes, just making it happen and letting these folks shine, I think that's, you know, exemplifying what a leader in this space, especially, you know, for the external affairs and marketing. I mean, that's what it's about, right? As much as you could take the glory for all the hard work you put in, every answer has been about the accolades that athletes, coaches, and other administrators around you have gotten to experience based off, you know, a lot of hard work and the process that you put in. So, you know, this has been just an absolute treat getting to know you and the process. And so the last question for you as we wind down here is, Tim, if you could let our listeners know one thing that you've done in your life that you would recommend they do or experience in theirs, what would that be and why?
I think it would be, and this is not, I would say, unusual in sports. I mean, it's not. Actually, it's probably more the norm, but I would say it's taking that step out a little bit, I guess you'd say a little bit of a leap of faith and, you know, moving for a job, moving somewhere else outside of your comfort zone. You know, I mentioned I'm from a small town in Missouri. I went to Mizzou, which is, you know, not quite an hour away from my hometown. I had traveled a little bit, you know, family vacations, things like that, but not extensively. And, you know, I still remember back of, and this is pre-cell phone and things like that, which is kind of scary, but, you know, I remember packing up my car and moving to Gainesville, Florida, and by myself, and nobody, you know, I'm hours away from any family, anything like that. And, you know, it was an incredible experience. And from there, I kind of feel like, I guess I'd say I never looked back. It was, you know, I wasn't scared moving. I remember that. I was excited. Again, I was probably too stupid to be excited or to be scared. I was excited. But that I grew so much from my time at Mizzou to Florida, and the move was part of it. And when you have to really kind of make it on your own at that point, I just think it opens you up to so much more. And like I said, I've been lucky to be at some incredible schools with some incredible people and live in some in great towns and pick up a little bit of their culture every time I've gone. So that's what I love the most. And it honestly made me, has made me wish that, you know, like when I was in college, I would have like studied abroad or something and kind of expanded myself that way. But you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it would have been cool. But I just encourage people, you know, don't feel held back by kind of your geography or, anything that's keeping you close to what's home or I would say comfortable. Step outside, you know, of what you do and take a leap. And that could even be, you know, a leap outside of what your normal job duties are. You know, that could be moving from, I don't know, you know, marketing to development or working in sales or whatever, and just kind of making that leap, because I think it makes you better. I mean, at least it did for me.
Well, I got to tell you, for everyone that's been tuned in with us from episode one, you know, we're bringing influencers on, not just your random Joe Schmoes on the show. And, you know, I've asked that question to everybody, Tim. And if I just had to go off the top of my head, I think we're at episode 20. And I would say confidently 75% of our guests have said something in and around that answer. And I think, you know, the through line is, you know, it gives you the ability to learn how to fail. It gives you the ability to learn how to become confident in yourself. And, you know, when you have no crutches to fall on, we're just seeing that all these traits that make these folks successful in this industry and other industries, they all sort of start with that foundation there. So doesn't surprise me that you answered it in that fashion one bit. Tim, for all of our listeners that want to learn more about UNCG and the subscription boxes and all the exciting things you guys are doing over there, what's the best way for them to either get in touch with you or learn more about the department?
Sure. Email is probably the best. Feel free to shoot me an email. It's T, B as in boy. I always laugh. George, G-E-O-R-G-E. So tbgeorge@uncg.edu. Be happy to answer that. I am on social as well. Probably Twitter and LinkedIn the most often. You can find me there easily. But yeah, I would be happy to connect with anybody on anything we've been doing and love to learn about what they're doing as well.
Amazing. And so we're going to go ahead. We're going to post all the links behind this when we post it. Tim from Check and Checkpoint, thank you for coming on. This has been 45 minutes well spent. And until next time, listeners, be sure to check yourself.